Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall and you're listening to the Downtime Podcast supported by O'Neill, and I'm going to be bringing you the most in-depth insight from the worlds of downhill and enduro mountain biking. The cold weather has definitely hit the UK, and when the temperature drops I really like to ride in full-length pants, so my O'Neill Legacy pants have been my choice for the last few rides now. They're super comfy, they've got room for knee pads underneath, they're lightweight, and most importantly they keep my legs out of the slop. O'Neill have kindly provided us with 10 pairs of their Legacy pants to give away. All you need to do is to be on our mailing list before the end of October and we'll pick 10 of you at random to win a pair of these awesome pants. To join our mailing list, head to downtimepodcast.com/subscribe and you'll find a form to fill out there. Once you've done that, you'll get an email that you need to open and confirm your subscription, so don't forget to check your junk mail. We won't send you loads of emails or share your details with anyone, but you will get our brand new weekend warm-up email every Friday with some interesting bike-related stuff to look at and get stoked for a weekend on the trails. It's been really popular so far, so get involved. You can check out all that O'Neill has to offer by heading to O'Neill.com. To keep the podcast going, we need to keep it growing, and you can all help me with that. Please tell your riding friends about the podcast, maybe recommend an episode that they should listen to, or pop it on in the car while you're on a riding trip together. Also, sharing the episodes on social media really helps more people find the show. I have no marketing budget, so the only reason we've got to where we are is because of you. So thanks to everyone who's been sharing and talking about the podcast so far. I really appreciate it. We got some brand new t-shirts that are now available on our web store over at downtimepodcast.com/shop, along with sweatshirts, hoodies and mugs too. All the proceeds go to keeping the podcast going, so that's also a great way to show your support. Okay, this week I'm chatting to Joe Breeden. Joe is one of the UK's top up-and-coming talents with a bright future in the sport. Join us for a chat about his move from football to mountain biking, the step up from UK to World Cup level and from junior to elite. We also cover his horrible injury from a couple of years back, talk about being the first place qualifier at Val d'Isère World Cup this year, racing snowshoe on a borrowed bike and much, much more. This young man's got a wise head on his shoulders and there's plenty to learn from his approach. So without further ado, here's Joe Breeden. Joe Breeden, welcome to the Downtime Podcast. How's it going?
Yeah, very well, thanks. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Mate. Yeah. Tell us where we are.
Sat in my house, actually where I was born. Mid Wales, not far from Lake Vyrnwy, right out in the sticks, you'll know from the drive. There's no one and nothing about. It can be nice, but it's also a bit of a trek to anywhere. We're in my lounge just on the sofa.
Nice. Yeah, very cool spot. Beautiful view out over the hills. Very nice. And actually, this is a bit, you say not many people around, but it's a bit of a hotbed of talent from the mountain bike scene around here, isn't there?
In terms of professional riders, there's a lot. I could name easy a handful within half an hour of here or 40 minutes of here.
Yeah,
which is incredible considering there's very few professional riders in this whole world, and I can name a handful within this, you know, small area. So it's incredible for that, for sure.
Yeah, what do you think? Have people moved here because of the riding, or is it as the terrain grown the people? If that makes sense.
Yeah, fair question. I think like, for example, I've kind of gone down this route of riding bikes, partly because of the Aftons. They're so close, and they're massive in the sport. So they've always been like an inspiration that brings lots of local tracks and stuff like that. But also there's the likes of the Seagraves who've moved in. Yeah. I know Veronica Sandler has just moved in. And there's a couple of other people I've been speaking to who are thinking about either coming over for a few months over the winter for some training or to move here full time. I think it's partly just the people around. There's always people to ride within the week. Good places to ride, and I think that's a big thing, because you know, when everyone else is at work and you want to be training the week and you want to be training with someone else, it's quite difficult to find that. So in an area like this with so many professional athletes, it works really well.
Cool. And who do you end up riding with then, because there's a fair amount to choose
from? Exactly. Mix it up for sure. Do a lot with Charlie Hatton, a lot with Joe Smith, a little bit with G Afton, Matt Walker. I think that's the main bunch, really.
Nice.
I think.
Yeah, it's a solid crew.
Yeah. And then like a lot with Chaos and Tani and Cade as well, because they are 6 miles from here. So, yeah, like there's a handful of people.
Perfect. It's mega. Yeah, nice one. So you say you were born here. This is where you've lived your whole life.
Yeah, literally born in the room next door.
Wow, impressive. Yeah. So how did you get into mountain biking then? Is that, I mean, looking out the window, it's pretty obvious that you're gonna get on a bike at some point, but how did it find you?
Normally, I think most people kind of veer in from motocross or something similar. I actually came from football, so in my younger age, like, I didn't know anything about mountain bikes, didn't really cycle, like, a little bit, but, you know, it wasn't in the family or anything like that. But as I said, I used to be a very good footballer. I used to play at Everton Academy, and then just, like, I think one of my mates from football was, like, a mountain biker as well, and he took me out one day. And then from that day onwards, I kind of, like, fell in love with that. And then obviously with the Aftons again, being so local, we could see a lot of what they were doing, and that was inspirational. And then it got to the point where I had to choose one or the other, football or mountain biking. My, like, career in football looked like it could be really good. And at the time, my career in mountain biking looked non-existent. But I went for what I enjoyed more. So I took the mountain biking route, not knowing what the hell was coming up with it.
Yeah.
But simply when football games were clashing with going riding with my mates, I wanted to go riding with my mates, but I had to play football. So, like, that was kind of the answer for me. It's what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So I just followed that.
Amazing. What age were you when you had to make that decision?
Probably about 11, I think.
Okay.
But, yeah, year, either side.
Yeah. Because that's a huge decision to make. It's a massive, two very different career paths.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a big decision. But you just got to follow what you love, I suppose. I put everything into football from as young as I can remember. It was football. And I practiced and trained so much for that. And to just sack it off like that was a weird one.
Yeah.
But I don't regret it. Like, mate, I might be, you know, might have a Bugatti sat outside if I had carried on with that, but it's not all about that, so.
Yeah, definitely. It's about doing what you enjoy.
Yeah, exactly.
For sure. Yeah, interesting. So at that point, were you racing or were you just riding for fun?
Just riding for fun.
Yeah.
We had, like, actually at my high school, we had a bike track, like a school bike track behind the school, which was really cool. So just, like, on some old bikes, hardtails, we'd just mess about there. And I didn't start racing for another couple of years, really.
Yeah.
I think maybe 12 or 13 when I did my first race. So, I wasn't racing at that point at all. And that's what I mean by I couldn't see any career in it. Like, I hadn't even competed. I didn't know if I was any good.
Yeah.
It was, I was kind of making the decision to go down that route just purely off my enjoyment for it.
That's amazing. So, when you first raced, do you remember that? Where was it? Was it a Pierce series being round here?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I think I did last year juvenile. That's when I did I did four Pierce races that year, and that was it. And then the following year, I did my first national. I did two nationals that year. And then as a last year youth, that's the first year I did a full national series.
Yeah.
So,
and were you naturally good at it kind of straight away?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah.
It did come naturally, like just riding out with mates. Like, before competing, I could see that I picked it up quite quickly, was quite good. And being the competitive person I am, like, my urge was just to compete, just get me to some races, let me compete against other people, let me try and, like, better myself. It was natural for me to compete, for sure. When I started, like, racing nationally or even at the Pierce, there was names like Cade Edwards, Matt Walker. They were already, like, British champions, and I hadn't even done a national at this point. So coming in, they were already big names for young riders in the UK. And it was weird for me to step in as, absolute nobody. But my first year doing nationals, I finished second overall. And there was a lot of people who were like, who is this boy? Like, Matt won it. I think there was Jack Tennyson, Cade Edwards, and Cale Seagrave behind me. And they were all names at the time.
Yeah.
Whereas I literally just walked in from a football background. Having not raced, it was a weird one. I remember there was a national I won in Revolution Bike Park, not really come from anywhere. And I remember it was Charlie Hatton's mum that said, I beat Charlie Hatton, he was second. And Charlie Hatton was quite a big name back then as well. And then his mum was like, who the hell's that? Who's that that's just beat you? Because when we were teammates, I remember his mum come up with that story. So yeah, that's kind of how it was.
That's pretty mad.
Picked up fast for sure.
Yeah. What do you think it was about you that enabled you to be good straight away? Could you pinpoint anything? Was there anything that kind of crossed over from football, do you think? Or it seems pretty...
I'd say very little crossed over from football. Obviously, I must have natural ability for it. But also, I kind of just commit myself to whatever it is I want to do, I just commit myself. So at the time, it was football, just football. And when I made the switch to mountain bikes, it was just mountain bikes. So I was just so eager to be better all the time. I loved doing it, so I did it a lot. So I think it was just like a mix of natural ability and the commitment to just doing it all the time.
Yeah. Do you think you had a kind of natural or an athleticism from the football side? Like, because a lot of people, speaking for myself, when I started racing when I was young, I wasn't fit at all, just from riding up the woods or whatever. Yeah. But maybe, I don't know, did you have a bit more formal... Yeah. Kind of coaching and training through the football academy?
The training in football was strict. So even at such a young age, we did quite a lot. Very different fitness.
Yeah.
But I'd say it was definitely, it definitely would have helped. I had the good base fitness coming into mountain biking instead of coming off the sofa playing Xbox or something like that.
Yeah.
So I definitely had the base fitness, but I suppose awareness of my body, coordination.
Yeah.
Dealing with pressure a little bit in football games, and also dealing with failure and success, I suppose. So those kind of aspects a little bit. But in terms of actual riding skills, like motocross, it's quite similar, or anything where you're riding, it's quite easy to translate that to mountain biking. But in terms of those skills, I would say not.
Yeah, fair enough. So did you... you had that background, you were used to strict training. When you went over into the mountain bike side of things, did you apply that and kind of look into training and stuff, or was it more just kind of riding and enjoying it at that point anyway?
At that point when I first started, I was just riding for sure. I wouldn't say I started training physically, focused programs, until must have been first year youth, I think.
Okay.
But that was just, I wasn't racing properly then either. So when I moved into last year youth, that was focused training for me, although it was just a program that I'd set myself from what I'd learned in PE in school. So it was no coach, it was nothing like that. It was literally just what I learned from school. And I put it into a little program to do before school and after school, and that was it.
Yeah. Still though, it's impressive commitment. I don't think many riders at that age are kind of creating their own programs and getting stuck into it.
No, not at all. I wouldn't say so. I think, I don't know, I just wanted it. I really wanted it. I knew last year youth, in the two nationals I did first year youth, I did all right, so I knew I could do something if I really put my mind to it.
Yeah.
So I just fully committed to it. I wasn't really pushed from anyone. It was literally just internally. I quite enjoyed, learning about the, physical side of things and training. And so with my interest of that, and my interest in the sport, I just kind of put everything I knew to it and gave it my best shot, and it worked out all right that year, so it was good.
Yeah, getting some good results. So did brands spot you? Did they approach you pretty quickly, or?
Not really, no. No, so second year youth, second overall, I finished behind Matt Walker. He was on Madison Saracen at the time already, along with Jack Tennyson, he was on that. I think Cade was on the Athlon Academy and Chaos, obviously, with FMD.
Yeah.
So I was kind of the only one out of them who wasn't on a big team. I was on Revolution Bike Park team at the time, which was amazing. But it wasn't a big team like the rest of the boys. There was nothing really came after that. I got picked up by a German team, Solid Bikes, at the time. And they took me onto their factory team for the following year. But I went to them for that.
Right.
They didn't approach me. Whether they would approach me or not, I'm not sure. Probably not. But after I got in touch with them, they were keen to do something.
What did you take to them? What was your offer?
CVs back then were very different. I can't really remember. I can't exactly what I would have sent them. It would have been an email to start with. Just probably to the Solid Bikes info, because I had no info at Solid Bikes. I had no contact there or anything. I was just trying to see if I could get anything from anyone, really. And what did I say? I don't know. I can't even remember. I really don't know. It was definitely not a structured CV or anything. It was just a little email I wrote with a little bit about me, a little bit about my results and what I wanted to do and what I could give for them the following years. And it was fortunate enough that they were actually looking into taking on a younger rider, I think, and it was Harry Malloy, a British rider himself, doing the managing of that. So there was some contact within the UK. But how I actually got in touch with them, it was just an email, just like a little bit about me, my results and what I wanted to do in the future. That was as simple as that, really. Yeah.
Worked out, though.
Yeah, it did.
Did they take you to, was that your first World Cup with Solid?
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty crazy, really. I was still at school. I would do all my work in the, just take BTECs, do all my work in the winter, hand it in before I left in about, I think, March time. Because if I took like real exams, I wouldn't be there to sit the exams.
Yeah.
And then I just travelled with that team all summer. I think first year with them at 16, I spent 163 days, I think it was, away from home, like travelling in a van. Nice. We stayed in accommodation, just racing IXS, World Cups, like bits of everything. It was absolutely flat out. It was far too much to perform at the races. It was just too much racing. But in terms of learning and getting bike time, it was incredible. Like, such a busy year, met so many people. Working with other elite riders on that team was a real eye-opener for me because I was still new to the sport, really.
Yeah.
So that was crazy. It was really, really crazy going from not leaving the UK to, like, spending all my time abroad.
Yeah,
so,
that's impressive.
Which was mental.
Yeah. Well, it's a good learning experience, right? Yeah. In a lot of ways, not just the racing. Like, being away from home and hanging out with people of different nationalities and all that kind of stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, I learned so much for sure.
Yeah.
Massive amount. Like the hard times, the good times. Like I got a lot of stick from some of the, you know, as you're, when you're a junior or you, they'll just give you so much shit and real nail you to the ground. But I think that kind of built me stronger, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You got to be able to take some of that, especially as a junior. You can't have it all easy. So.
It's inevitable.
Yeah.
Yeah. So was it Lourdes your first World Cup?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
How do you, looking back on that now, like, how do you remember it? Was it a fond memory? Was it?
I really don't remember a lot. I remember my brake pads falling out on the first straight and I nearly died because there was just no back brake. Pin wasn't through the pads. That's my strongest memory of it. I think I qualified like right on the verge, like 28th or something.
Yeah.
And finished 18th. I remember all that. I remember a few bits and bobs from it, but it's not a real strong memory.
Did it feel like a big step up from the UK scene? Like, how different was it? Kind of level and technicality and...
Yeah, it was. That was a big shock, actually. Now you say that. You ride a British track. You ride it fast. I could be within quite good times of the elites. And then you move to the World Cup track and all of a sudden it's like a completely different world. Like, even though the time was... I don't think Lourdes is that long a track. But just the features on the track separate you massively. I definitely rode so tight, so scared, and I was just really, really slow. Like, it was, yeah. I think just the mixture of everything, I just seized up. And, like, Matt Walker, his first World Cup, we were close in the UK.
Yeah.
And then he went, and I think he was second in that first World Cup. He was on the podium that first World Cup anyway. And he just dealt with it really well, like just went straight in and smashed it.
Yeah.
And I think I was 20 seconds back from him, first World Cup.
Whereas you'd be within a second or so here.
Yeah, in the UK. Yeah. So I was like, anyway, he just adapted to it better than I did for sure.
What do you think it was then? Like a mental pressure or a level of like a technicality in the track? Like what was creating that separation, do you think?
I think it was mentally... I had the ability to ride the track well, but like mentally I was just unfamiliar, scared, just like a complete new environment. And it was just a bit scary for me, I think.
Yeah.
Like I was out there on my own with teammates, but the teammates are focused on their own stuff. We didn't have like a manager or anything like that. So I was literally just out there on my own, doing the practice on my own, trying to learn, take it all in. And it was just a bit too much for me to perform at a high level straight away.
Yeah, I guess Matt would have had a bit more support around him from Madison Saracen at that point, maybe.
Well, he'd have had Will and the Madison team, but even so, he definitely adapted to it quite well. I suppose he'd maybe done more testing abroad, but already, but just the features on that track were just quite a shock. The gnarliness of it, yeah, it was just like, oh my God. Yeah, pretty crazy for sure.
Yeah. What do you feel you had to learn then to be competitive at World Cup in your junior days at least?
I struggled with this for like the whole first of the year, like well off the pace at international level. When I come home to a national, I'd be right there. So they're so different, and it's hard to put your finger on what it is, but I think it's more of a mindset thing over anything else. So if I go to a national, I kind of know that I'm one of the best there. Like, I thrive off that. I'm quite right and confident. I'm familiar. Whereas at a World Cup, there's like all these massive riders, massive features. And it just, I think it's just confidence. I had none of it. And like, yeah, just, I think scared, literally just scared and
yeah,
not committing to anything, or I don't know. I can't really put my finger on what it was, but it was a mixture of all those things that I was just unfamiliar with and I wasn't confident. But mindset thing, like my ability wouldn't have changed.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, a trigger in the mind that's somehow done me over.
Well, yeah, so I guess you've got to believe that you're capable, right? Which you know in the UK, yeah, you've proved it.
Yeah.
So to go out there, unless you're able to kind of big yourself up,
yeah,
and feel like, yeah, yeah, I can do it.
I think,
it.
Yeah, maybe I just didn't have enough confidence in myself back then, maybe.
Yeah.
It's a difficult one to know, but it took me all of that, well, pretty much the whole year to try and get my head around it. By the end of the year, I got there, and I think I was just more familiar, a bit more confident, experienced with it all. And having, like, finishing, like, 18th the first one, I think 18th the second one. And then I had a 12th, a 10th, then I finished the year at World Champs with a 9th.
Okay.
So like, I finished the year like within a good margin to the win.
Yeah.
And in a good position, which I was happy with. But I wouldn't really say my ability was any different from the start of the year. I'd say it was more of a change in mindset,
yeah,
and confidence,
okay,
and feeling comfortable in the environment.
Yeah.
I'd say that was the main difference for sure.
Yeah, and you mentioned Matt Walker. You also had Finn Isles in your category, yeah, as well. So it was a pretty tough time to be in juniors.
A very tough time.
Yeah. Do you think that was a good thing or a bad thing?
Good and bad. Really pushed me. So if I wanted a World Cup podium, I had to really go for it.
Yeah.
You couldn't just hang about, put it down a cruiser and end up on the podium. That wasn't going to happen. Bad in a way that I would have missed a lot of limelight because, you know, the limelight's always on the top three juniors or really, and if you're not in that, then you're kind of not noticed. So obviously they pretty much stole all of that the first year.
Mm-hmm.
But it just made me so hungry to do that the following year. So it pushed me on for sure. Like, if I was winning everything as a first-year junior and there's not a lot of other competition, then I probably wouldn't have had to fight so hard to develop, like, myself to be better.
Yeah.
So, I wouldn't change it for anything. Like, I had to fight every weekend as a second-year junior to try and get on the podium.
Yeah.
Because there was so much competition. So, I have no regrets of that. I wouldn't change it at all.
And 2017, that went pretty well, didn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Massive change, I think. I was already training, but it was very focused for that year. Again, I knew last year junior is a massive year. I knew that if you want to compete in elite, you pretty much need to try and get a ride, unless you've got a lot of financial backing from somewhere else, which I hadn't. So big year, a lot of pressure. I knew I wanted to try and make a career out of it. I knew you have to be top three in the world really to be noticed. So that was literally my goal. And having coming from like 9th of World Champs, I knew I had quite a bit of work to do to be up with the top boys. So literally just, I can't remember what it was at the time that I had to work on, but I literally just dedicated everything to it. And it worked. Like, I came back that year and I was competing with the top boys, which was amazing. So I think just like, I was a few years behind the other boys because they'd been racing a lot longer than me.
Yeah.
So I was still developing and taking in a lot more than I think they needed to. But I literally just kept pushing. And I believed I could do it. That was something I never had doubts of. It was just putting the work in and doing it. So just full commitment. And it happened. But it would have been so easy to, you know, crash the first round, break a collarbone, or even worse, and then you miss a couple rounds and then it's done.
Yeah.
And like, you might not get a ride then for the elite. So it's just, the pressure is pretty savage.
It's quite shrewd at a young age to realise how important that season is. Like, you're already looking at where you want to be down the line and realising that that's a key season.
Yeah.
Is that through just you kind of studying sport and understanding it? Have you had advice from people? Like,
I worked with my coach, Alan Milway, since I was 16, since I was a first-year junior.
Okay.
So I learned a lot from him. I think he was still working with the Aftons at the time. But he did a long stint with them, and he's done a lot with all sorts of athletes. So, like, he's got a lot of knowledge that he passed on to me. General knowledge from my parents. They haven't competed in the sport, or they don't know anything about the sport, but just general knowledge, life knowledge. And I suppose just like, well, at that time, actually, I was reading a lot of books.
Okay.
Like Chimp Paradox, just a lot of psychological books, really, on performance, learning what I could from school, like PE, sport. But other than that, there wasn't a lot else. No.
Interesting. And that's pretty young to be getting into the psychological side of things as well.
It was. I hated reading, but if I thought it was going to help me, then I'd do it, or I'd try my very best to do it.
Yeah.
It was just like self-learning, really. Bit of everything.
Fair play. Well, it paid off. You finished up that season with a silver medal at World Champs in Cairns, yeah?
Yeah, for sure. It started off like, I think I had sixth, fifth at like the first three rounds, world rounds, but I was so scared of getting injured because I knew if I got injured, then the season would be written off, and I was a bit too aware of that. So just a bit cautious, like not pushing my limits or anything. But after I had those first three rounds, I knew that I needed more, and I knew I had more, and it was time to give it. So I just gave it, and I ended up, I think, third at Monsignan World Cup, followed by second at Lenzerheide World Cup, followed by second at World Champs, behind Finn Isles and Matt Walker the whole time. So it was good. End of the year was good for sure.
Yeah, and so how did that make you feel? Because you've obviously worked very hard to get to that point.
Yeah, incredible. First World Cup podium is absolutely unreal. Probably one of the best moments to get to that point. World Champs was incredible. To finish second in the world is like, oh my God, that was a dream for sure. You kind of don't see it happening. You kind of forget where you've come from because it's such a slow process. You get used to each situation, each moment. I wasn't actually that happy at Worlds because I wasn't happy with my run. I just made quite a couple big mistakes that I just really wasn't happy with. But then to finish second, stoked. Happy and not happy with that one, but the rest of it was really good.
Yeah, and starting to think maybe you've made a decent career move at this point, like you can actually see a future in the sport.
Yeah, exactly. You start learning way more about it. I'm not sure when I actually learned that you could earn good money from it. Well, definitely not good money in comparison to a football player, but you can earn a decent living out of it.
Yeah.
It's difficult, but you can do it. So I could see I had the ability, if you're second in the world, you must have some ability. I knew the love I had for it, and I knew the commitment I was putting into it. I just wanted to carry it on, and the next step was to get a ride really into the elite field with more support. And that's how it went.
So. Good stuff. So yeah, you moved, was it your last year junior you moved to Saddleback UK?
Last year junior.
Yeah. So you'd been on that for that 2017
season.
And then you went and you had a team meeting off season.
That was it.
That ended in a little let's go and have a little pedal out.
Yeah.
Tell us what happened on that ride.
It was probably like a month after World Champs. We all met, like all the team, Saddleback team, met just to discuss the year, discuss the following year, because I was on a two-year contract at the time. And then after all the meetings, we just went out for like a team ride, nothing much. But I ended up like doing something I probably shouldn't have, like especially that time of year. But yeah, I did like a manual to a jump. And then as I jumped up, I was trying to land in a manual again, but kind of just went too far back, started looping out, and I had to jump off, but I couldn't really get off the bike. So I just landed on one leg, and I fell from quite a height at quite a speed. So like when I landed, just the sheer force of the impact just shattered my heel and split my kneecap in two. And that was like, I'd broken collarbones before, but they heal. Yeah. I fractured a pelvis, but that healed quite well. But this, as soon as it happened, I knew I was smoked. Like, I've never broken an ankle, I've never broken a leg, but I knew, like, the feeling of that was coming from my ankle was just insane. And I knew that it was absolutely done with. I tried to walk a couple steps immediately, because I just wanted to know I was all right, but I knew I wasn't. Like, the crunching and the pain and everything was terrible. So that ended in a really bad injury, just a simple ride. As I say, it was like November time, hospital job, you know, the whole shebang.
Yeah. What was the initial prognosis on it? Because that's a nasty injury, especially the heel. Yeah.
What do you mean? What was the initial injury?
Were they kind of concerned about how good you'd be post surgery and stuff?
Yeah, massively. Like? They weren't too concerned about the knee. The knee was split down the middle and separated, but they knew. They were confident that was a simple fix. Two screws, pull it back together, it'll heal.
Yeah.
But the foot was really complicated. Like, the heel had shattered across, like, the middle and then separated back and forwards. And then, each part had shattered into loads of bits. So because of the amount of bits the heel was shattered into, they weren't sure how they could really fix it.
Yeah.
Without it being painful. It was quite a terrible affair, really. I was in Hereford Hospital, I think it was, or Gloucester Hospital, one of them. Anyway, the service was, like, terrible. Like, they told me I was going to have surgery the next day. Never happened. And they were just, it was terrible there, to be honest. So then Mum and Dad drove me up to Shrewsbury, and they had a bed there for me, because we got that ready. And then from there on, it was really good. I had a really good surgeon for my foot and a really good surgeon for my knee. We went straight in on that as soon as I got there, pretty much, and had 13 screws and plates into my heel, and then just two screws in the knee.
Yeah.
But they were really concerned with the foot, because they wasn't sure how much movement I'd get and how much pain I'd have consistently for the rest of my life. They said I might have to fuse it, I think it is.
Right.
So to like reduce the pain, but then I'd lose even more movement. So I was really concerned. Like, they were like, obviously the surgeons are normally say it as bad as it will be.
Yeah.
But they're like, we don't know how well you'll like walk again. We don't know if you'll like be able to run properly ever again. So like, you can imagine everything going through my head. I'm like, I've just had a really good year. And then I've just done myself and could potentially end my career just from a silly crash, really. But, you know, you have to do what you can. So the surgery went really well, luckily. And as I started to heal, you still don't know what it's going to be like.
Yeah.
But it was a long process.
You were in hospital 2.5 weeks,
yeah? Yeah, yeah, 2.5 weeks in hospital, which was a savage time as well. But, again, like, you learn a lot from it. It was a dark time. Fair experience. And then, again, you don't know how well you're going to be for months after until you start healing. But then it turned out all right. To be honest, I didn't have too much pain through my foot. The rehab process was long and a lot of work, but when I did return, it felt like it was good. Like, yeah. At the end of the day, if I was a runner, I'd be real concerned that I'd probably be done with. But as a mountain biker, all I have to do is put a shoe on, clip it into the pedal, and then leave it strapped there.
Yeah.
It's not like I need perfect movement in it or anything. I struggle now to clip out because the rotation is minimized. I'm so pleased for how I have healed. We had all sorts of treatment and physio and did everything I could to give it every chance to heal well. And luckily we're here now and I'm pretty much, well, as normal as I'll ever be, but it's good enough for sure.
Yeah. So that Alan Milway that supported you through that massively. Process.
Worked with him really close on this, direct with the physios in Birmingham as well.
Yeah.
We worked, tirelessly, just getting movement back, getting strength back. It was a big process.
Yeah,
for sure.
So that would have started kind of December 2017, the rehab, I guess. You think
I think it happened mid-November. The crash, I was in hospital for 2.5 weeks, and then I was bedbound for like another couple of months, I think. So wow, it was okay. Getting on well into 2018, the following year. And we didn't know schedule of when I would be back. They said I could start riding 9 to 12 months. You kind of have to go off that at the time.
Yeah.
I thought I'd be able to get it down, but you never know. I'd never been through a process like that before, so I'm unaware. But ended up racing. My first race back was a national at Fort William, 7 months post-surgery.
Good effort. And that's a stacked field normally because everyone comes for the World Cup, yeah?
Yeah, and I finished fourth, which was unbelievable.
How long had you been back on a downhill bike?
I think like a week and a half.
Wow.
I think I'd ridden the downhill bike 2 or 3 times and then went straight into that.
You must have been hungry for it.
Yeah, I was. I think it was a weird one. I had no idea what to expect. Just gave it my all and it turned out well.
Yeah.
But I definitely came back too early because after that race, obviously Fort William's not an easy track, like it's brutal. And after that race, I really struggled with, it was mainly swelling in my knee and I don't know the, you know, bits and bobs of it all, but they reckon something was getting trapped in my knee and was getting caught from the swelling and stuff. So that really set me back for a good few weeks and I couldn't do anything again. So I returned a little bit early, unfortunately, but again, I don't regret it, but it set me back for like the World Cup. And then I was just fighting, trying to get the knee and foot good enough to race the rest of the year, but it was difficult all year.
I remember seeing your Ardrock and your like the muscle wastage was still evident in that leg.
It was still down by like 30%, I think, and every time I'd race I couldn't do anything the next week because it was so like sore and stiff and swollen. So it was quite a write-off year. Still had some good achievements and again learned so much going through an injury like that and rehabbing it. So it was a fair experience.
If you did it again, well, let's hope you don't, first off. But if you were going to rewind and go through that experience again, would you have taken the entire 2018 season out to kind of rehab, or would you have done the racing in the way you did?
I would have done it the way I did. I might have come back a month later, but I would have done it the way I did because I think a year off the scene, it's a year less learning for me.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't afford to not be learning, you know, having started late already.
Yeah.
So I had to do it really because my contract was up at the end of that year as well. So I had to do something to try and get a ride secured for the following year.
Mm-hmm.
So really I had no option but to ride, for the learning purposes, for getting a ride the following year.
Yeah.
And just physically really wanting to. So yeah, I know. I wouldn't have taken the year out, not a chance, unless I really had to.
Yeah. So going into that 2018 off-season then, you had more surgery, did you, to clean up some stuff?
Yeah. I was having constant problems with my knee all year. I had more surgery on that to have it all cleaned up, 2 screws taken out, and they just did something with the cartilage to clean it all up. It was miles better after that. It was quite a small surgery, and I was just out for like a month or something, so it wasn't too bad. But at the same time, I had, I think, 2 screws removed from my foot, only because they actually unwound themselves. So they were starting to poke out the skin, and it just felt horrible.
Yeah.
But it was only 2 screws, so it wasn't too traumatic. They left the rest in there, and then I just took like a month off, pretty much in bed.
Yeah.
And then, started the process again of trying to get my leg strong. Because it took a long, long time.
Yeah. And going in, I'm guessing you do some measurement type stuff with Alan. I know he likes to measure a few bits and bobs.
Yeah, he does it probably.
How long did it take you to get back to kind of full strength left to right?
I'm still not back.
Right, okay.
In terms of like muscle size, like looking at it now, it still looks smaller.
Right.
But that will take probably another year or two. In terms of like actual power output through them, on the watt bike I can get 50% either side even over a long period of time. When I'm squatting heavy, I can come up neutral, so I'm not like, during the rehab process I was leaning over to my right side a lot because that was my stronger side, but I can come up straight now. So like the strength I can put out through the left leg is pretty much the same as the right, but looking at it, it's still smaller. Getting that last bit of size back will take probably another year or two, I imagine.
But in general, the performance is
The performance is there now for sure. When I'm going flat out as I can on a watt bike, it's 50-50 either side, so that's really good.
Cool. And working with Alan, I guess, brings other top riders into the gym with you.
Yeah.
Does that help having like those other guys around?
I love it. I absolutely love it. He's got quite a few top athletes now. So I last winter worked quite a lot with Joe Smith, Charlie Atten, Mike Jones. And then there's an enduro rider, professional enduro, world motorbike enduro rider, Joe Wooten, who we also train with. It's cool to mix up with him from a different discipline. Like, he's an absolute beast. Like, he sets the benchmarks for a lot of the stuff we do. So it's really good to motivate each other, see what everyone's putting out, like who's good at what, and how we can kind of all become as good as each other, if you know what I mean. But everyone wants to be a bit better than everyone else. But, you know, it's good to definitely train with those guys who are just as committed as well.
Yeah, fair play. You mentioned earlier on the mental side of things, and that you've done a lot of self reading and bits and pieces. Have you ever done work with like a sports psychologist or any of that side of things?
Yeah, I have. So like when I was younger, I did a lot of reading, and then last winter I started seeing a sports psychologist, Rob Copeland.
Okay, yeah.
So you'll probably know he worked with Steve Pete and Josh Briceland. Got in touch with him. The main reason that prompted me to do that was that I really struggled to qualify well. It was just something in my head, I wouldn't qualify well.
Okay.
I could race well, but I couldn't qualify well. So that was like the main thing that prompted me to see him. Worked a lot with him this winter. He's been absolutely amazing. Just got in touch with him, said, look, like, this is who I am, this is what I do. I understand you have a backing with, you know, Petey and Josh, and can we work together? Is there anything we can do? And he took me on board, and I worked with him throughout the winter, still working with him now. Simple stuff, as you've probably heard before, but it made a very big difference to myself. And it's worked. Like, I had my best qualifiers ever this year, even better than my final. So like, something's changed. Do now a lot with him.
Interesting. What sort of stuff have you worked on then? What kind of techniques have you found that have worked for you? Because I guess everyone's individual a bit in that.
Yeah, for sure. Very simple stuff. I think some of the big stuff for me has been planning, preparation, and process.
Okay.
So again, everyone's probably heard it a million times, but literally just sticking to the process. So for example, when I qualified first at Val d'Isol this year, never done that before, that's a massive thing to do. Like, the pressure and your mind's trying to wander to all sorts of different things that are happening, and you've literally just got to focus on what you have to do right now to give yourself the best possible chance to perform come that run. Except that there's, you know, you can't control the outcome. Except that things do go wrong, but just give yourself that best possible chance to do the best you can. So just making that a focus of focusing on what you need to do has been a big thing. Instead of like thinking what other people are doing, or like thinking of, like, so for qualifying, like thinking about puncturing or crashing, or, you know, just chuck all that away and focus on the process and doing that best you can.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, you know, simple stuff, but it's made a big difference. And also planning, preparation, having it all sorted before. Like, I write down, I have a race plan for every weekend, where I'll write a couple of things I want to do in each practice session. And then in the post-race, I'll write a couple of things that went well, a couple of things I want to improve on for next week. So just literally simple stuff like that, nothing crazy. He likes to keep it real simple, and I'm a fan of that. It works. A big difference to me.
Well, yeah, it worked straight out of the box, really. So Maribor, first round, you qualified, was it 12th?
12th, yeah. So that was one where it was dry practice and then it rained for qualifying.
Yeah.
And normally I'd be like, right, it's wet, it's going to be slippy, you're going to have to be real careful, don't crash, you know, it'd be so easy to do. But instead I just focus on like, oh, I'm going to go as fast as I can, I'm going to like ride as fast as I can and kind of deal with it as it comes. And it worked, turned out really well.
Yeah.
Like something I've had to try and learn is to trust my instincts a bit more instead of having to think about it. Because like I overthink a lot and kind of, yeah, always thinking about stuff far too much. So just to try and switch that off a little bit, rely on my instincts a little bit more and go for it.
Yeah. And was that the first time you've been at the top, kind of in the thick end of it with all the fast guys?
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
Different atmosphere at the top of the hill at that point.
A lot less people like warming up. I think at that race I was by the side of Jack Moore, and there's like, you know, all the boys warming up at the same time. I think Pierre on, Loic Bruni, Greenland, I can remember all them doing kind of the same warm up at the same time. So that was brand new for me, but I absolutely loved it. I had like even more adrenaline. I think it was my first time on the live feed Red Bull TV.
Yeah.
So a mixture of all that, I was like just so pumped. Like I was really, really keen, absolutely loving it. Like never been so keen to race my bike. Just that extra bit of adrenaline just got me going.
Cool.
I crashed.
Yeah, there was that little route that took you down.
I think I was literally just a bit too keen, just charging on a bit much. But again, like learned from it and handled it better the rest of the year, so that was fine.
Yeah.
It was definitely annoying because it wasn't a good way to start the year with a crash and no points, but I'm young. Let's learn from it.
Yeah, definitely. You've got plenty of time to work it all out.
Yeah,
exactly. I think it looks like people seem to have to kind of push beyond in order to work out where the right place to be is, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Most riders don't just hit that sweet spot straight away.
No.
They're behind the curve.
I think
then
if
they
you
go
can,
ahead
you're
of
something
it.
Special.
Yeah, maybe, and maybe there's a few that can manage that, yeah, not many. But then, Val d'Isle, you turned up and put down another pretty special qualifying run.
Yeah.
Again, some weather stuff going on there. Similar thing for you, just kind of approaching it. I'm going to go as fast as I can and deal with this.
Yeah, I'm always do better in the rain in comparison to other riders. Just having been brought up riding wet tracks and nothing but that in the UK. So I'm always better in the wet, but also, again, just the same mindset of like, like normally, like in the past years, I'd just go into freeze mode, be real stiff and cautious and always thinking about safety first and all this. But you can't do that. You can't afford to do that at international level. So, yeah, just to crack on and ride as fast as I could.
Yeah.
Deal with it as it comes. Like, luckily, like I can, you know, my instincts do seem to deal with it. And I've got even more confidence in that now. So that's helped.
Yeah.
But yeah, just same again.
And it gets you a bit of kind of coverage and attention as well, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
Being the last man down the hill
for
and
sure.
All that
massive.
Side of things.
That was another difficult one because last man down the hill is massive. Like, yeah, that's a big one. Everyone's saying, oh my God, first place qualifier, like last man down the hill and all this. And everyone was like, not everyone, but a lot of people were expecting me to blow up.
Right.
And I know that just from the pressure, trying too hard. I had a message from my manager and my coach the night before just saying, look, just don't try and do anything different, just do what you do. And that was really wise. You know, if you qualify 50th or you qualify first, there's nothing should change in your process to that run.
Yeah.
So literally just fully focused on the process, had like a 4-hour wait in between practice and my finals instead of what I normally would have, like an hour and a half or 2 hours. But again, just trying, like, just, you know, do what you have to do, focus on the process. And I really enjoyed it. Like, I really enjoyed the feeling of doing that. Not many people get to do it, so it's pretty amazing. So, yeah, like, I rode the top really well. It was 12th tops, 16th top split and 12th by the middle split.
Yeah.
And then I just faded from there. It was a mixture of physically and also not wanting to lose it, so my mind come into play a bit too much, like, right, you've got here, you've done well, don't stack it. So you should never think that, but it's kind of what was going through my head. My physical, like my arms, I couldn't hold on to the bars. I just got a bit lost towards the bottom, but I was real happy with how I rode at the top.
Yeah.
And ended up in 25th, which at the time was my best World Cup result. So, like, yeah, brilliant, brilliant weekend. Like, yeah. Learned a lot from that.
Do you think that result was coming anyway, or do you think that first place qualifier kind of drove some of that result?
I'd say the first place qualifier definitely drove some of that result. Again, like a bit more adrenaline, a bit more confidence. Like I tend to do better when there's more pressure. So there was a lot of pressure.
I bet.
You know, last man, Red Bull TV, everyone was expecting me to blow up. There was a lot going on. So, and I tend to thrive off that, I think. And I love it. So, like, yeah, there was just that extra bit of go in me, you know, extra bit of oomph to really give it everything. As I say, it went really well at the top and just faded at the bottom.
Yeah, and it did seem to drive kind of a stronger second half to the season than the first half for you.
It really did. I think just like literally confidence. Everyone talks about it. Confidence. As soon as you've got it, you're on a roll. One good result and then you're on a roll. And that was how it worked for me. Like just, I don't know what it is. It's mad how something so small can make such a difference. But it's, again, it's mental. It's not my ability. I got better from that week to the next week.
Yeah.
My physical strength and got better from that week to the next week. So it's just a mindset, nothing but. So just the confidence I took forward, knowing that I could do it. I was really happy with my top splits. I knew that I hadn't really done anything special, but they were right up there.
Yeah.
So to just keep at it, and I don't know what the change is. I don't feel no different. It's just a bit of something, you know. We're talking such small percentages in this sport. I think like 3% over a 3-minute track is 5 seconds, I think.
Right, yeah, it's nothing.
And it's nothing.
It? Yeah.
So just a little bit more confidence in yourself can really make the difference.
Bit of self-belief.
And 5 seconds now is difference between top five and the top 30, probably.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So, yeah, just that little bit of extra confidence. You enjoy it when you're doing well. It just all seems to flow a bit nicer. You don't not have to struggle for it.
Yeah.
So yeah, from there on, it went pretty well.
Yeah, it did. And then obviously snowshoe for the final round, and being part of a kind of relatively small UK-based team, I'm guessing you already have a little bit less kind of sport and support and infrastructure around you for that event. But you turned up in the US and your bike didn't.
Yeah, didn't turn up.
Not good.
No.
Tell us about what happened.
Yeah, horrible experience, but again, turned out really well. I wasn't going to go out to snowshoe. I didn't have the support. I didn't have anyone to go out with. I didn't have, like, no backing to do it. It wasn't on my contract to go out there, so there wasn't really support from my team. So it was a difficult one. And I tried to figure out ways of doing it, but couldn't really think about it. I made the decision not to go, and then I debated it for ages, and I finally made the decision not to go. I couldn't quite see how it was going to happen. Once I made that decision, I was like, I felt so wrong in it. Like, I wasn't happy with it. I felt like I had to go. Like, obviously I didn't have to go, but I felt like I just really wanted to get myself there.
Yeah.
So I really started looking into like all options of how I could get there, who I could stay with, who I could pit with, how I could get the financial backing and all that sort of stuff. So as I started talking to a few people, like I spoke to an American intense team, not the factory team. It was just another like small American national team.
Yeah.
And they actually had a rider going to do his first World Cup there, and they had quite a big pit setup. And they said, well, you can come in and stay with us. We'll help you out. We'll look after you. We'll bring spares that we've got.
Sweet.
So great. That's first like part of the puzzle kind of sorted. And I was like, well, what about accommodation? And the Affertons offered for me to stay with them, nice. Which was amazing. So, like, straight in with them. And then I had financial backing and lifts from, like, the airport and just little, like, different people from different teams helping out in every different way. So, like, that was, like, just beautiful. Like, so many people keen to help me.
Nice.
Came together really well. So I was like, brilliant. Like, it's pretty much sorted. Let's go. Everything ready, prep, like had my bike because I wasn't taking a mechanic out there. There was no way I could get that sorted. So made sure my bike was absolutely prestige. So when I got there, like I had to do nothing. It was ready to go. Got there and obviously bike didn't turn up. So I'm like, brilliant. I wasn't even going to come now. Bike doesn't turn up. Like what's going to happen next?
But
That didn't come. There was no sign of it. They didn't even know where it was. They couldn't track it. So I was like, oh God, well, what's going to happen now? So yeah, all that aside, like I had to try and sort a bike, otherwise I wasn't going to ride.
Yeah.
That's a long way to go not to ride.
For sure. A
lot of effort. So yeah, obviously I had to look into all options, spoke with pretty much everyone I could think of. If you got this, if you got that, and no one had a full bike I could use. If it was in Europe, I'm sure there'd been several bikes I could have ridden. But out in America, when everyone has to fly there with limited supplies of spares and bikes and stuff, it was hard work. So I couldn't get anything through Intense. So I wasn't going to be riding Intense. Then I had to look at like who else has got some stuff. And I ended up with Scott. Spoke to Brendog, and then Brendog spoke to the manager. And then the manager from Scott was absolutely amazing. He was like, helping him out in any way he could. They didn't have a full bike, but they had a spare frame of Dean Lucas's.
Yeah.
So they gave me their frame. It was a large, which was 37 mil shorter than my current bike. But at the time, like, beggars can't be choosers. Yeah, like, exactly. I've got to try and build what I could. And then just literally ran, this was on first practice day, ran around the pits getting different parts from different people.
So everyone else is up on the hill practicing?
Yeah. Well, I was at the pit, I think, like 7:30 on practice morning,
yeah,
trying to get the bike built because I didn't fly in until the day before.
Right.
That was the only time I could get there. So literally running around trying to get a bike built in time for practice. Got like forks from Fox, which was amazing. Got the frame and shock from Scott. Got like handlebars from Intense, got like a headset from Pivot, just literally single parts from everybody, to finally make a full bike. And Brendan's mechanic helped me build it up, as well as Polish Pete and Gazzy B, the Afton's mechanics.
Yeah.
So like mad rush getting everything together, like just getting any parts I could to build up a bike, and then got it built by like 2 PM, I think it was. So I'd missed the first couple of hours of practice, but managed to get on track for the afternoon.
Sweet.
It was pretty wild, for sure. it was chaotic.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, because your head's all over the place at that point, yeah, right? You've spent the morning fretting, yeah, and trying to sort stuff out, running around. Like the energy that you're using up,
literally,
it's pretty full on, I guess.
Just also a lot of hype and adrenaline to like get me through the rest of the day, I suppose.
Yeah.
The shock was blown up when I got on the bike. So it was making all sorts of noises and it felt terrible, but I had no time. I had to get like as much practice as I could in the couple hours I had left. So I just did lap after lap after lap trying to learn the track.
Yeah.
Got a new shock that night and then started the morning. I absolutely loved the bike. It was brilliant. Really enjoyed riding it.
Yeah.
It was very different. All the sizing was completely different. As I said, a lot smaller. But then, yeah, later the second day, qualified 14th.
Yeah.
So like, it's just ahead wasn't
of,
expected.
Ahead of Dean Lucas, whose frame you're on.
Yeah, ahead of all the Scott Factory riders, which was pretty crazy.
How did that go down?
Yeah, they were sound. They all made jokes about it. And in fact, Dean Lucas and his mechanic come up to me on race day morning and said, we want our bike back now. You're too fast. awesome. Obviously just joking, but yeah, they were, yeah, mega sound about it.
That's amazing effort, yeah.
It really made me realise how like, how many nice people and how much of a mint community our sport is. Like, you wouldn't get that in many other sports. Like helping out other riders, it's incredible.
Yeah, that's super nice, isn't it? Yeah. That everyone chipped in and wanted to get you up the hill.
Yeah, literally. It was amazing.
Yeah. So did you have any chance to kind of get properly set up on it? Like as far as suspension?
No, I took Brendan's base settings from the shop, stuck them on, had a couple of like changes, but nothing big. And then ran my fork settings from what I run on my other bike. And then, like, again, a couple of clicks here and there, but I didn't have a lot of time, so I just cracked on. Perfect. And it felt really good, to be honest.
Yeah. Do you feel like you're pretty good at getting set up anyway? Do you kind of know what you need to adjust to get where you want to be? Or
yeah, I've learned a lot this year, massively. But at the end, it's no shoe, for sure. I didn't have any time, really, to play about with stuff. I knew that if something wasn't perfect, I just had to accept it, and I couldn't change it. It was like I didn't have time. But everything was to a point where I thought I could go fast. The setup was, it was good enough for me to go fast on it,
yeah,
almost straight away. So It was mainly the hardest thing was the fact that the bike was 37 mil shorter. That was a really, really big jump for
That's
me.
That's a huge change. Yeah, because you ride an XL Intense.
Yeah, so it was massive change. Change in riding style. And yeah, just the behaviour of the bike. And it was a completely different linkage. So it was a lot to learn, but like it was a great bike.
Yeah.
And I quite liked a shorter bike. It was too short, but somewhere in between would be nice.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Fair play. And again, it got you a bit of attention and kind of some media coverage.
That's it.
Yeah. All good.
It was good.
Yeah. So then you, was it 34th in the end?
Yeah, 34th in the finals.
Yeah. Happy with that?
Yeah, I was, to be honest. I mean, I wanted more, but in fact, after qualifying 14th, I felt it was like, I didn't do anything special. I thought it was just a smooth, good run, solid enough. I thought,
yeah,
maybe that was the best way to ride that track. So I didn't really try and do anything different on the race day, but everyone else just pushed harder.
Right.
I rode well, I had a good run, but everyone else just pushed harder and it backed me right back to 34th.
Yeah.
But again, it's like the matter of probably 2 seconds between me and the top 15.
It's mad, isn't it? So tight.
Yeah, so it's crazy. Like a tiny change in anything makes a big difference.
Yeah.
I was happy considering all that happened, you know. I didn't even know if I was going to get a ride, so yeah, hell of an experience as well.
Yeah, happy days. And you flew back from there pretty much straight to Red Bull Hardline, yeah?
Yeah.
First time at the event?
Yeah.
And did you miss the first day?
Yeah, it was, again, I flew quite late back from Snowshoe.
Uh-huh.
Had an overnight flight home and then drove straight from Birmingham Airport to Red Bull Hardline track walk, so I didn't go home, just went straight there. I was written off.
Wow.
It was like 30 hours of travel, I'd hardly slept, just went straight there, walked the track, and then just to see what it was like if I wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And it looked absolutely amazing, so I thought I'll have a go, see what I can do.
Yeah.
Went home the following day, just slept all day. Luckily for me that the practice was called off because it was too wet and windy. Yeah. And then went and had a go the following day. So maybe not the best decision I've ever made to do that. Jet lagged and all a bit not prepared, but I was glad I had a go. Gives me a great experience for next year.
Yeah, how did you find it then as a track?
Incredible. Really, really sick track. But also they make it look very easy. When you watch the finals runs, they make it look very easy. Been like a downhill ride. I didn't really struggle on the technical downhills. They're gnarly, but like it's what I'm used to. It's what I practice. The bits that really had me were the massive jumps with just takeoffs that just go vertical. They just go so tall, so like quickly. Really big, really long, and just so sharp. Them kind of jumps I've never really hit.
Okay.
So I was really inexperienced with this. And that's what caught me out. Like you sessioned the sections, the Renegade was all right, but then there was a couple of jumps that just really had me. I had to go, but like I couldn't quite get my head around it. Like the boys make it look so easy, but it's really not that easy.
Yeah, fair play.
You have to hit right speeds. You have to know what you're doing in the air and position and everything. So I had to go, got through them, but it wasn't great. And then just had a crash on one of them. It wasn't big. I landed all right, but just a bit sideways. So I just got spat to the floor and ended up spraining my wrist and hitting my shoulder.
Right.
Nothing serious, but the wrist was quite bad at the time and I couldn't ride. So
yeah.
Whether it was a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know. But I think I definitely want to go back having ridden some more jumps in between.
Okay.
Then and next year, just because I need some experience on them jumps. Like Chaos will go to the moon, you know, he knows what he's doing, like he loves it. That's, you know, he's got a lot of experience in those jumps, so I just kind of need to experience some of that, because it is, the jumps are very different to that of a World Cup, that's for sure.
Yeah, straight up.
Yeah, some of the downhill bits are similar, but the jumps are, yeah, they're pretty big.
Yeah, but a cool format for an event, something different at the end of the season. Yeah,
I think it's a mega event. Red Bull look after you really well. They hired out this massive accommodation and most of the riders are staying together and having a really good time. Like the atmosphere, everyone's helping each other. It's a really cool event for that.
Nice.
It's a really cool event.
They got you dressed up as the Welsh rugby team.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. I missed that day because that's the day I was sleeping.
Right. Yeah. Probably wise.
Yeah, yeah. But no, really cool event, and I hope it keeps going for many years to come.
Cool. So you'll be back.
Yeah, I like to think so. I think it might be in the middle of next season, but
yeah, because we've got a big gap, haven't we, yeah, for the Olympics in the summer. So
yeah, so that makes it a bit more iffy, like middle of the season. But I'd like to go back for sure. Yeah. I think it's a sick event. Just need to learn some big jumps in between now and then go and have another go.
Job done. Yeah. All right. And then in amongst all of this kind of hectic season of World Cups and bits and pieces, you've managed to take the UK National Series overall as well.
Yeah. Won that British overall, which was
good. How does that rank? Like, how important is it to you?
For me, I really wanted to win it. It was a goal of mine from the start of the year. I finished second overall the year before. I really wanted to win it this year. I'm still riding for Saddleback, which is a UK-based team. The Nationals to them are a really big thing. So for me to win the British Championship is probably the most important thing to them. So for them, it meant a lot, which means it means a lot for me. So I went out, had a goal to win it. If I got a goal to win it, then I want to do everything I can to win it. So yeah, I did win it, which was nice for everyone involved, really.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, it works well for everyone, doesn't it? But yeah, a nice thing to do. And yeah, just good to see British riders supporting, or British elite riders supporting the series as well.
It used to be a lot better. When I would go to watch a national when I was a lot younger before I was racing, there'd be a lot of top boys racing. Or if you look back at Roots and Rain and see the amount of top level riders who were racing nationals back then, is massive compared to what it is now.
Yeah.
You'll be lucky if you've got three professional riders there now. Like, the first one was really good, it's always good. Fort William is always really good. But the latter races, there's very few top riders who will show up. And there's many reasons for that. But I really hope it gets sorted, because I think it's a big thing for the UK, for the UK downhill scene, for upcoming riders, and for just everyone involved, really. But so I really hope it gets sorted.
Yeah. What do you think needs to change to kind of encourage more riders to attend?
Generally, the tracks are pretty good. This year, most of the uplifts were pretty good, but organisation's quite poor.
Okay.
Nothing ever runs on time. The uplifts at A were terrible, like an hour between runs. Who wants to race that? You know, when it's terrible organisation, you're sat in a queue for most of the weekend. No one wants to do that. But I also think, I don't know because I wasn't riding at the time, but I hear that you used to win like £1,000 if you won a national.
Right.
A few years ago, or more than a few years ago. And now I think I'll win £350.
Okay.
So people won't do it for the money.
Yeah.
I'm sure if you could go and win £1,000 again, you'd get a lot of people trying. Like, for a weekend's work, that's not a bad, payout.
Yeah.
So if there was money involved, I think you'd get more people in it.
Yeah.
Or even if the organisation of it was all really well ran, and the uplifts were good, then you'd have people there. But as it stands, you won't get riders there. And without big teams there, it becomes a really small event. You get a few spectators.
Yeah, it's like a vicious circle, and it keeps spiralling down, I guess.
Yeah, it just makes the UK downhill scene not look great.
Yeah, that's a shame. Fingers crossed it improves.
Yeah, I think it needs some quite big changes, and I don't know if there's anyone in power to do so, but I really hope so.
Cool.
Because for me, it's a big, it's that national series. It's what I grew up racing.
Yeah.
It's what got me the rides I've got now. For me, it's quite a big thing. But I just hope it develops back into what it was, if not bigger.
Fingers crossed.
We'll see.
So looking back then on your 2019 season, how do you kind of sum it up? How do you feel about it?
Pleased. Again, my contract's up this year. So it's another one of those, I'm still not proven. I still don't have a big name for myself. So I had to do something to get a ride for next year. Otherwise, I'd have to go and get a full-time job and you know, training and stuff like that would sacrifice then. So obviously had that as a pressure. But I felt I managed it well. I did the whole year without any serious injury. My targets were win the British Championship, medal at UK National Champs, and finished top 30 World Cup overall. So I won the British Championship, medalled at UK National Champs, and finished 34th in the World Cup overall. So, like, yeah, that's pretty much
sums
it up.
Happy with that.
Yeah. And I was very pleased with the end of the season. I was consistently in and around the top 20. It's just the first two rounds that I messed up, basically.
Right.
Caused a bit low down the overall, but yeah, like, you're really happy with it, to be honest.
Good stuff.
Don't feel like I pushed myself too much.
Yeah.
Don't feel like I took myself over the limit. I couldn't afford to risk injury. So, like, I had to be on the side of caution the whole year, really. But yeah, really pleased, to be honest.
Yeah, good stuff.
Hopefully it'll see me through to the next step and give me a few more years to keep at it.
Yeah. So are there some irons in fires for next season then?
Conversations ongoing. Yeah, nothing signed, but in discussions with people.
Excellent.
It looks good, so hopefully it will all come off and I'll be good to go.
Nice. And what are your hopes and dreams for 2020 then?
I'd really like to get inside the top 20 consistently, or in and around for sure.
Yeah.
So top 20 World Cup overall is definitely a goal of mine. Be nice to just, you know, be consistent in that and feel comfortable there, feel like that's where I belong. And then I've medalled at UK National Champs now, so the only thing I want to do now is win one.
Yeah.
But that's hard. So, but it's my goal. I don't want to just medal again. I want to win. Mm-hmm. So that's another goal. And then after that, I'm not really sure. Depends what the team wants me to do, where I go, and yeah, what clashes with what. But World Cup, main focus,
yeah.
UK National Champs. And yeah, just give it everything again and hopefully it'll be where I want to be.
Sweet. Good stuff. All right. We're getting close to the end of our time, but we've got our now four questions that we end with. So we'll hit you up with those.
Fire away.
First one. If our listeners had £150 to spend to improve their performance on a bike, what would you recommend they spend it on?
Easy one. Come and get some coaching with myself.
I was going to say, yeah, you're doing some coaching now. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been doing it for a while. Never really advertised. I've just done it with people that have come and asked me.
Yeah.
But I've done, since the season's done, I've made a bit of a push for it to get some work in just until, made a push now. I got like 1 to 2 days every week for the whole of November.
Nice.
Which is about perfect for me. I wouldn't want to take on any more than that.
Yeah.
Because I've obviously got my own stuff to do. But it's really good. I really like doing it. It's rewarding seeing people benefit from it, and it does make a big difference to a lot of people. So
cool.
It's a nice thing for me to do.
Yeah.
And I do recommend it. If it's not with myself, go and get it with someone else.
Yeah, like, for sure.
It can make some simple like techniques and pointers can make a real big difference. So that's what I'd recommend for £150. You can get a good days for that for sure.
Nice. Where are you doing that?
Mainly Revolution Bike Park.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so little bits here and there for more trail riders at some trail centres, but I focus myself at Revolution Bike Park.
Yeah, and if people want to find out more about that or get in touch, what's the best way?
Email or Instagram.
Okay.
I don't have a website.
Okay.
I haven't made a push for advertising that. I've had enough work as it is.
Fair play.
Just through my social media, so yeah, just email or Instagram.
Good. What is your Instagram?
Joe_Breeden17.
Got it. We'll put it in the show notes so people can find it.
Thank you.
Wicked. All right. Question two, and this isn't too far for you, but if you could wind back the clock and sit down with yourself age 16, what advice would you give him?
I don't know. I really don't know. Trust the process. Simple one, I suppose. But then again, like, you don't know to trust it until you've got the experience to do that. But I suppose if you were told externally from someone who's done it, I think it's just to literally, whatever you enjoy and you've got a bit of talent in it, just commit yourself to it. I was never pushed in any direction from my family or from anyone externally.
Yeah.
But just to really commit to what you like doing and hopefully you'll get something from it. It's not always the case, but that's why, for example, I carried through school to have some grades, as like, you know, you never know, might need it for if I want to go to uni or anything like that.
Yeah, bit of a backup.
Yeah, partly why I do my coaching as well.
Yeah.
But now just yeah, if I was telling myself 16, I'd just say commit to what you love, for sure.
Cool, good advice. And then if you could have a coaching day, who would it be with and what would you want to learn from them?
I always think about this. When I listen to your podcast, I always think, what would I answer this question? I really don't know.
You can have more than one.
If I could have a coaching day with anyone. No idea.
Who out of the kind of World Cup field do you look at and think, I wish I could do that the way that person does?
Manar's the guy I look up to most.
Right.
Just because he's made such a long career of it. He's done it with great enjoyment by the looks of it. And he just makes it look so easy. I think he's probably the most efficient rider on a bike. He doesn't look fast. He doesn't move around the bike much, but he's just efficient, really efficient. And the career he's made himself, for what he's made for himself, I think is astonishing. And to have kept up in his level and his speed at the age that he is now, I think is astonishing.
Yeah,
I agree. It's similar to Valentino Rossi when younger riders come through and they get better. He finds new ways to still get better. Yeah. Whereas a lot of riders will just stay the same, but they'll slowly drop through the field as younger riders are coming through.
Yeah.
But Manar has kept, what he does, I don't know. He's kept finding a way to get himself back to the top.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised to see him back at the top again next year. Like, so he's the rider I admire the most. And that's like, that's my ultimate goal, is to end up in a similar position to him in terms of a long career at the top of the sport.
Yeah.
But if I had a coaching day with him, I don't know what I could learn, really. You might say otherwise.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, just looking at how he rides externally, I'd be really interested to know a bit more about his home life, about his life away from racing.
Yeah.
What he does, how he's maintained himself, like at the top of the sport for so long. So yeah, maybe I'd take a look into his lifestyle, I suppose, a little deeper.
Yeah, go and hang out at his house for a few weeks.
Yeah.
And see what goes on behind the scenes.
Maybe. I don't think he really shows a lot through social media. He tends to keep it pretty professional, maybe you could call it, I don't know, but it's all based around racing and bikes.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever really seen anything about his home life or anything, so I'd be really interested to see more into that.
Yeah, cool. Interesting stuff. All right, final question. What do you do every day that you think benefits you?
Enjoy myself. Enjoy myself.
Yeah.
I think, well, to start with, if you're not enjoying it, you're not going to do it to the best of your ability. You've got to enjoy yourself to a certain extent. You know, you don't want to be doing stupid stuff that's going to affect your career in a bad way. I think for me, it's every day I want to be better. There's something, whether it's in the winter, for example, sometimes like I'll step away from the mountain bikes for a bit and just focus on becoming a good trials rider.
Uh-huh.
Or doing something a bit different. I just always want to be getting better at something. Whether it's, you know, business or coaching or anything, I just want to be developing myself in some area of my life.
Yeah.
And 80% of the year, that is mountain biking, that is racing my bike. And that's what I love. But you do have to come away from that at some point to really, like, not get sick of it or not get lost in it all. So. Yeah. Yeah, just to improve every day.
Nice one. Good stuff. Well, it's been super interesting chatting, mate, and finding out a bit more about your career so far. Wish you all the best for a healthy off-season, and look forward to seeing how you get on next year. Yeah.
Thank you very much for coming around. Much nice appreciated. One.
Cheers, mate.
All right, that's it for this episode with Joe. I hope you've enjoyed listening. A huge thanks to O'Neill for supporting the podcast. Head to O'Neill.com to check out what they have to offer. If you want to be in with a chance of winning one of 10 pairs of Legacy pants, just join our mailing list before the end of October by heading to downtimepodcast.com/subscribe. And don't forget to check your junk mail for the confirmation email. If you've got a couple of minutes, then leave us a review wherever it is that you listen to the podcast. Give us a follow on social media where we're at Downtime Podcast. Subscribe to the show so you get all of our episodes delivered straight to your device. And if you want to help support the podcast and get yourself some exclusive Downtime Podcast goodies, including our brand new t-shirts, then head to downtimepodcast.com/shop. All right, we've got another awesome episode coming up soon, but until then, get out and ride.